I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Stan Suhonen. It's not spelled the way it sounds, and you'll find out why shortly. Stan was once a senior partner of one of the largest mezzanine loan providers in Eastern Europe, managing a $450 million loan portfolio. Then he became the founder of Sorso, which is a fractional CFO firm that helps outpatient clinics grow profitably. Stan has a background in finance with a CFA designation. He blends data-driven strategy with AI innovation to transform clinic operations. He's also a thought leader of the evolving role of finance in healthcare services. And so it's going to be a really interesting story. That Stan was born in Moscow and found his way to the U.S. And I've been looking forward to this conversation. I think what you'll walk away with are some nuts and bolts on, well, one of the things he said before we came live, he said he sees businesses that are successful one day and then the next day they're not. And that's the plight of so many businesses. And so high level, that's where we're ultimately going. Stay tuned. Stan, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I was glad to have you. And so I was very intrigued. So our screener, our person who makes all the recommendations for podcast hosts, I think you went through her. She was born in St. Petersburg, Russia, and you're born in Moscow.
Yeah, the capital of Eastern Europe, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. What year did you move to the United States?
Yeah, I kind of like my journey was pretty straightforward until I decided to make a really big move, like a big move. So I'm very early. I decided that I want to be a financial person. Like I remember I was 15 years old and one of my classmates brought like a business magazine. And before that, I was interested in soccer. And I started reading this magazine and like, oh, like there's so many businessmen, entrepreneurs, they're making so much money. They're selling for like businesses for this amount. And it was so fascinating. And then from this point, I remember I decided that I want to be at some point an entrepreneur and business owner, but I want to learn. And I think like in a few years, I decided that I want to work in a bank, in corporate lending, and the way I can learn financials, because I also love financials, and I also can see business, and I also can speak with business owners. And that's actually what I did. So I landed like mid-size Russian bank, Moscow bank, and then I moved to UniCredit, Societe Generale, like large European financial institutions in corporate lending, investment banking. So I started with like a really, really small businesses, but they didn't even have like any accounting. And then like I'm working on like $1 billion revenue businesses. And as my career really jumped, so I became a senior partner when I was 29. It was like a really fast career. I managed a team of 20 people. Like we really pivoted this mezzanine financing product in Moscow, and it was really big at some point. But I was thinking about like my entrepreneur age, and I decided that I want to move to New York to start my hedge fund because I was fascinated by Warren Buffett, Bill Ackman, all this hedge fund. And I decided to make this move. So I took my family, 6 luggages, and just moved to New York with like kind of like no, like just have like, I don't know, $200K on my account, and that's it.
Wow. Wow. And so you moved to New York, and then what happens?
Yeah, so I kind of I had the plan A and B. I had a partner and we agreed that I'm responsible for investments and operations. He's responsible for the clients' relationships. And like it took us way longer to set up a hedge fund in terms of like legal stuff. And then we launched our hedge fund. It was summer 2020, so just the peak of the pandemic. And we had a few seed investors that decided not to join our fund. And so we kind of like hardly reach a few millions of asset under management of the hedge fund. But anyone who is in this industry knows that it's not feasible. Like you need to have at least 10, 20 millions just to pay current expenses, not even about like salary and everything. So yeah, we haven't been working on this hedge fund for a couple of years, but it's just I completely depleted my savings and I saw it's not working. And on top of that, I learned about a lot of US-based hedge fund managers that also kind of struggling and doing it for more than 10 years, and it was like really, really hard. And I decided, okay, I need to do something. It's just like I'm just running out of the money. And there was like some kind of like chance. So one of my new friends from New York, his father started a startup, like just a new startup, and they were looking to fundraise, and they just sent me the materials, investment materials like a pitch deck and financial model, and then I learned like how the Americans usually sell when they say everything is just perfect, the best in the world. So they told me before I opened these materials, they say like it's the best materials you've ever seen, and I've seen by this time like I know thousands of financial models, thousands of presentations, so I know how it should look like. And it was like the worst one, like the financial model, like just like completely. And I said, like, okay, I can help you, like, and I will charge you something. And they agree. So surprisingly for me, like they agree that I can help them to polish those materials. And it's how I started this kind of like a fractional CFO service. At that time, I think even this name wasn't like known, like a fractional CFO just was kind of like a financial consulting.
Wow. Wow. So now I was looking at it, looks like you come from a technical background. You have a degree in physics.
Yeah, it's my parents are both from it's called Zelenograd. It's suburb of Moscow, and it's known for the Silicon Valley kind of answer to the Silicon true Silicon Valley to United States. There's a great book Chip War about the semiconductor industry, and they actually cover a lot like my hometown. Yeah, so my parents both like graduated from this university. They both used to work in semiconductor industry, and they insist that I should have like the first degree in a semiconductor industry as well. And I can tell it's very complicated. Like
Well, what's
comparing with financials, semiconductors are way more complicated. And the level of fundamental knowledge that you need to acquire before you can even start understanding certain things is just, it's so high.
Yeah. Well, it's just interesting to see you go from, physics to.
Yeah, at that time, like as I said, like when I was 15 years old, I already knew that I'm gonna be in financials, and it's just like okay, it's part of my first. I have two master degrees, and the first was physics of semiconductors, and the second one was in the same university, the financial management. So I knew that I'm gonna be in financials already, like yeah, even before I was in the university.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. So your hedge fund doesn't make it. What happens next?
Yeah, so I start doing this consulting a little bit and then start getting more and more clients. And I think the first like 2, 3 years, it was kind of like not really full-time kind of dedication because I was working primarily with startups, companies with no money, like a small revenue. And I didn't see it can be scalable. And because like I know they cannot pay like, I know, 5K, 6K a month for my service. And then I learned about like most successful fractional CFO companies in the United States, and I just figured, oh, they're just working with larger companies that still cannot afford a full-time CFO, or they don't need a full-time CFO, but I actually can provide way more value, and I kind of like transitioned to this market, and it's where I kind of like found this product market fit, if you can say.
Yeah. Well, fascinating. And you said that you're focusing heavily on outpatient clinics. So, like, what type of clinics?
Yeah, it's any kind of clinics that outpatient, it can be urgent care, primary, mental health, dental, any kind of outpatient healthcare clinics. And I think one of the main reasons why I decided to focus on this particular sector, because I onboarded a new client in this sector first time last year, and I started working, and I realized because of this kind of intricate relationships between the healthcare provider and insurance. You probably heard about this. It's not straightforward. And the thing is, I like my kind of subjective opinion, but I think that more than 50%, maybe even 75% of all clinic owners right now don't know the actual revenue, because they bill a certain amount of the insurer, but insurer pay way less, but actually you need to properly record like what they paid, and it's a bit complicated. I hate when the consultants say like, oh, this complicated, that complicated, but it requires a certain procedures, a certain setup, and it should be monthly, quarterly setup to record your revenue. So, and I realized, okay, they don't even know the actual revenue, so they probably don't really can make really informal management decisions because they don't have a really good financials.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine with healthcare, there's a lot of back and forth about what's covered, what's not covered, how it's coded, and the pre-negotiated rates and all of that.
Yeah, these are codes, and you build the codes, and these certain things how you can decrease the denial rate. It's when you provide the service and the insurer for some reasons reject it. So these are certain things how they delay the payments, and these are certain things what you can do to decrease this rate. It's just like a very, I would say, it requires a systematic approach how you need to tackle, but there's no kind of like a super secret or anything. You just like follow the procedure, follow certain rules, and you can be in really good shape. But I think it's one of the like it's kind of one of the main disadvantages of this business, but it's also one of the main advantages of this business, because I think it's a recession proof. And because it's based on the insurance, and it's like insurance usually compromise, I don't know, like 90-95% of all revenue. So it's kind of like a really stable business. If you get like a good, like a stable number of clients, yeah, it's a really good business.
You said that you use AI to help them transform their operations. How do you do that?
Yeah, so I use AI for several instances. First of all, for my financial operations, like revenue forecast, for example, I use it a lot. It's really good. It's faster, it's more precise, but you need to know how to work. It's not like if you open any AI model right now and say like, okay, here's the historical data, can you forecast revenue? It's gonna be like nonsense most of the time. So you need to use prompts. You need really detail those prompts, but if you do it correctly, if you iterate, it's a really good one. It takes so many factors into account that I don't think like human beings can do, or you need to construct a very complicated multi-factor models that it takes so much time, and it's required like a lot of knowledge, and it's complicated. And I know in our sector, especially for like, I don't know, for like $10 million revenue business, nobody does it. It's just too much. It's one example. I think another example, it's really good for any any legal documents and analyzing legal documents, especially if it's complicated and there's a number of documents and you need to look closely what you're looking for. Like, I don't know, there's a certain clause and you need to understand, is it like what's the results of like certain events and how, like, kind of financial and non-financial. So it's a really, really good one. Where I think the AI models still kind of don't deliver like the best results, and when you need to reconcile, like, for example, there's a accounting data and I need to reconcile it in a certain way and I don't want to spend too much time, and this can be, I don't know, thousands of lines. And AI models are not really consistent as the biggest. So you can set up it in 1 month, but then like next month you use the same prompt, you use the same file structure, the same data set, and it doesn't produce the same results. It's kind of like I see right now the one of the main drawbacks, especially like if you look at the corporates, large companies, for them consistency is probably the key. Like, for them, if they implement in any part of the steps, like they need to know that it's consistently produced the same results, and otherwise it will fall apart.
Yeah. So one of the things that you said, earlier was, you see so many businesses, they're successful one day and then like overnight things are bad. What causes that? And what are some common problems that you've seen when you've been working with companies?
Yeah, I think they're I would say like three main issues. Like the biggest one, when you reach a certain level, when you have revenue, when your gross margin is kind of like in a good spot, that is the biggest killer of all businesses, and I've seen it so many times. And what usually happens, it's kind of like a twofold movement. Like there's a recession or some like economic shock or like some other economic kind of actions. I know like tariffs, for example, right now, right? Like you, if you have like 100% import stuff and there's like, I know, 50% tariffs from India, like you just your COGS, your cost of goods of sold just increased substantially. You need way more money in your business just immediately, right? So these kind of shocks, I see that like a lot of companies can overcome them if they build some margin of safety. But if you have a lot of debt, it just decreases like this space where you can navigate and how much you can do. And I've seen even like businesses, I know, for example, debt EBITDA is only 3 times, business is growing, everything is good. And then there's a, I know, macroeconomic shock. Like, I don't know, for example, 2008, I remember like they were like a good number of really good companies with relatively modest debt burden, but because of these macroeconomic shocks, banks just stop refinancing debt, or like the like interest rate just like skyrocket. And then if you have like certain debt that you need to refinance and you cannot do, you need to be in a default state, right? Like you in a default state because you can't serve your liabilities. So the debt is the biggest killer, and I would tell any entrepreneur, be very, very cautious. I'm not against totally about debt, but because I used to work in a corporate lending department for so many years, I've seen so many stories, and it's just like you need to be very cautious and you need to play scenarios. I think another thing that very few entrepreneurs do, and I understand they have this kind of like positive mentality, they kind of don't really focus on negativity, and it's why they be able to drive the business. But they should be someone with the kind of this risk-averse mentality and play out certain scenarios. For example, I know like with tariffs, like if you look at your suppliers, like let's say like you play scenario, what's happened if you lose some of them, or like they increase price by 30%. What's happened next? What's happened next month with your financials? Will you be able to sustain the same volume of your supply, or you need to decrease? If you cannot buy the same amount, what's happened with your revenue? If the revenue decreased by 20%, what's going to happen? I know if you have debt, will you be able to pay your debt obligations like next month, next quarter. So I think it's super, super important and it's still underutilized. I hardly see even fractional CFOs run those scenarios properly and looking like at those. And I think it's just, I believe you can build an absolutely infallible business if you run those scenarios and you use that very, very cautious.
Well, that is sage advice. Stan, thank you. Thank you for coming on Leaders and Legacies. How can people reach you?
On my LinkedIn, it's Stan Sukhinin,
How do
and
you spell that? Because it doesn't spell like it sounds.
yes, Stan, STAN, and then SUKAKHININ on LinkedIn,
Okay.
and X, it's Stan 3S.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Craig. It was a pleasure.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.